going on, everybody? It's your buddy, it's your pal, Spazzy Phoenix, the YWC Reality Check, with one more little piece of, I guess you could say, fantasy booking before we get ourselves out of 2023. And yes, right off the bat, I'm going to say it. You look at the title, you think, oh my God, he's talking about another title in WWE. With the prefix that I would only advocate for this if we were down to one men's championship, one women's championship, one tag team championship, one women's tag team championship, and just go from there. Maybe one mid-card title, then you've got room for one of these. Now, I would advocate for either this or a mixed tag title, but I know that the idea of a mixed tag title is a lot more of a sticky wicket to get through, so we're not going to do that today. Maybe in the new year. Put it down in the box below or hit me up on X at Spazz Phoenix if you want me to do a video on why I think a mixed tag title would work in the WWE. But here, today, in the state that we are in December 2023, I thought it most appropriate to list one more thing that WWE could do better than AEW, and that is a six-man or trios championship. Now, I'm going to call it the WWE six-man title because I'm not AEW, and I don't have this weird obsession of, like, let's try to sound a bit Mexican. I don't know what the deal is there. I know that they're trying to take from such and such and whatever. But even the ROH titles are the six-man titles. You could do the WWE six-man championships, etc. There was one way back in our history, hence the thumbnail. So, why would we do it? Because there's so many groups right now. There's so many factions right now. And while the competition made their bread and butter on factions and friendships and relationships in the early going, that has surely fallen apart. It's either fallen apart or it's gotten watered down. And let me be clear about that. As far as a criticism, those are two very different things. If all the groups just fell apart and everybody did their own thing, that's one thing. If there's so many groups that they don't mean anything and it's watered down, that's an entirely different complaint. So don't conflate the two. Now, the number one thing, and this is the main point of this podcast today, is if you're going to have a division, you need to have people to fill that division. Now, one of the complaints of the WWE right now is they have a women's tag team championship with no real women's tag team division. Now, you can draw alliances, you can draw previous relationships and friendships between certain people and pull out some teams. Absolutely. They had it with Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey, but Ronda Rousey left. You had, you know, Tegan and Shotzi, who are now both in separate tag teams on separate shows now. You have all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, you can put together any combination of the four horsewomen, and nostalgia alone will carry that. I mean, the rumors of Sasha Banks coming back to team up with a babyface Bayley, nobody's going to argue with that. But there isn't really a division. So, and you have to have a big enough division, I should say, that people that are not going for the championship can still have believable feuds within that division. You can have number one contenderships. You can have proper tournaments, not weird, loosey-goosey, you've lost, but you're still in the tournament somehow tournaments, Tony Khan, looking at you. So you have to have a very, very robust collection of people, or in this situation, a robust collection of teams, which I believe WWE has, and that's what we're here to talk about today. I've got a list of teams here, some of them that I've put together with logic, some of them are just teams that already exist, and some of them are larger factions, like I said with my Four Horsewomen example, they're larger factions where any three of them could make up the trios team. Now, some of them I got a lot to say about, some of them are just like, oh yeah, these are these guys, and you know about these guys. So, I think there's tiers in the list that I've got here. I think that there's, you know, every division needs jobbers. You know, the women's division had Sasha Banks for a while. Anyways, sorry, I'm going to try and be nice. She's coming back to WWE, probably one more L for AEW. It's fine. There's mid-carders, and then there's clear main eventers within every single division. So, I'm just going to go through the list. I'm going to say why I think they get here. For some of them, I'm going to say how they got here. For some of them, I'm going to say, you know, hey, I don't think this is going to be a very good team, but it does add to the roster as a whole. So, the first two I'm going to put together because they're basically the same situation, and that's one tag team and a manager, and the manager decides to wrestle. One, is over on NXT, you've got OTM, which are basically just like two gangster guys. Very, very stereotypical, but that's what NXT does. And they're managed by Scripps, you know, formerly known as Reggie, formerly known as the wine connoisseur guy whose only job was to job to Sasha Banks. But he's actually quite good. He's actually quite fun to watch in the ring. He's not the most, like, bell-to-bell five-star classic in the Tokyo Dome brother, but he's a fun guy to watch. And putting him with these two giant dudes, and watching him, he's still a relatively goofy character, and watching him be with these guys and try to be a badass almost works because of how obscure it is. So, we know he can wrestle. He's managing two other wrestlers. Why don't the three of them just wrestle? That could be a lot of fun. That could be NXT gets represented in this six-man tag division. Now, honestly, it should go without saying before I talk about NXT being represented, I should say, if this title does exist, then it would have to be like the women's tag titles. It would have to go across all three brands, because I'm picking teams from all three brands, including NXT, and I'm going to talk about representation again as we go further down the list. I don't think you can treat it like the tag team division, where there's one for Raw and SmackDown and then one for NXT, because I don't think you're going to get enough. So, should have said this at the beginning, this title goes to all three brands. It is a brand-hopping title, in my opinion. Scripps and OTM is the first one on the list. Second one on the list is basically the same situation, and a team of three guys that have not really found their niche anywhere, because it's basically the same thing. Two gigantic dudes managed by a wrestler that some people like. I mean, he gets a pretty good reception when they come up here to Canada. I don't know why, but whatever. And that's Jinder Mahal and Indus Sheer. Indus Sheer, when they first went to NXT, were a little bit reckless, not the safest guys to watch in the world, but it made them more fun to watch. The Creeds versus Indus Sheer had a couple of insane matches in NXT, and I think it was because none of them were being particularly safe. Now, unlike Scripps, Jinder Mahal, very polarizing figure. You know, a lot of people think he should never have been world champion. A lot of people think he's a jobber. A lot of people still like to reference him being in 3MB, which, I mean, all three members of 3MB are doing way better than they were doing in 3MB, so I don't know why that's still a thing. Now, granted, if Heath Slater, just known as Heath in TNA, was still in WWE, would I love to see a one-night reunion of a really, really pissed-off version of 3MB and add it to this list? Yes, but we're not going to do that. Drew McIntyre is off doing his own thing. Heath is over in Impact, soon to be TNA. And Jinder Mahal is here with his two, you know, big beefy boys. So the three of them, unless he's managing them because he can't wrestle anymore for some reason, I don't know why this couldn't be a thing. I don't know why he's not wrestling. Like, he's got these two big guys to back him up, even if he goes and has singles matches and they back him up. Jinder Mahal hasn't wrestled in, like, forever, like, since COVID, maybe? But yeah, Jinder Mahal, Indus Sheer is an example. Scripps and OTM is an example. Now, the most prominent example is what we have going on SmackDown right now, and that's Lashley and the Street Profits, or what some people are calling the Street Business or the Hurt Profits, because we have to mash all the names together. Now, the way they've done this group together right now is that Lashley basically came in as like the rich dad and now acts like they owe him something, and they keep letting him down because the Street Profits, who are awesome, are losing matches while Lashley destroys pretty much everybody. They tried to make them heels, but Lashley was in round one of the Intercontinental Championship tournament, and they did that on the Tribute to the Troops episode. Lashley, very publicly speaking about his service in the American Armed Forces, is not going to make him a heel, and everybody loves the Street Profits. So I don't know what they're doing character-wise with these guys right now, but power and speed is always a perfect combination for tag team wrestling. Power and speed for a trio where you've got Bobby Lashley on one end doing all the power, Montez Ford on the other end doing all the speed, and Angelo Dawkins kind of doing both. Angelo Dawkins in this team, in the tag team and in the trio, is the one that always gets left by the wayside in the conversation, which is super unfair. If they were a trio, I hope he would, like, find a way to project whatever his role is, because he's, the way they portray him on TV is he's the Matt Hardy of the Hardy Boys. Yeah, people like him, but, like, Montez Ford is the guy. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily, Montez Ford, awesome, don't get me wrong. But the team of Montez Ford, Angelo Dawkins, and Bobby Lashley, powerhouse within this new six-man tag division. Now, speaking of powerhouses, we got a team over on Raw that is not a team right now because one of them is injured. Eric of the Viking Raiders went for, like, double spinal surgery or some kind of ridiculousness. Now, that's terrible. Nobody wishes that on anybody. We wish him a speedy recovery, obviously. But in the meantime, they have put a little bit of effort in pushing Ivar as a singles guy, which is awesome. Dude's a huge powerhouse. The guy, for the size of him, is a high flyer, which is awesome. And it's led to this little mini feud that he's had with Bronson Reed. Now, I'm sure you can tell where I'm going with this. We're going to go the Sheamus and Cesaro route. They enjoy beating the shit out of each other so much that eventually they become a tag team. While Eric is gone, Ivar and Bronson Reed become a tag team, and they, you know, like Twin Towers, you know, natural disasters, whatever you want to call it. Like, the two of them together should destroy everybody. And when Eric comes back, I would have it where the titles are announced first, and, you know, Ivar and Bronson Reed are tearing up the tag team division, and then Eric just kind of walks into the frame one day and says, hey, there's new titles to go for. And the three of them just go in there and absolutely wreck everybody, because now you have Ivar, who realistically has two tag team partners, and it just makes sense. And I don't think you have to go any farther than that, quite honestly. Whether they would win, whether they would be like the inaugural champions or whatever, I don't really know. I think, at least initially, because they're such a powerhouse mountain to climb, as the cliche goes, I think they would be in the final. And the team that you're trying to get over would have to beat that. Like, they would be the gatekeepers to the belts in the initial stages of these new championships. Alpha Academy. Already a team. Already exists. Already have a great manager in Maxime Dupri. And put them together as a faction. Because they are... Sorry, put them together as an actual trio. They are a faction. They all back up each other. They all support each other. They're all in each other's corners. Roddy, roddy, rod. But I don't think very many times, other than on NXT recently, have they actually fought as a trio. Now, the cool thing about this is they are a team. They are, you know, bonded together in a story that already exists. But they are three pretty unique guys. Gable, wrestling machine. Absolutely amazing. Is going to be the Intercontinental Champion at some point. For sure. Otis is another guy like Ivar and Bronson Reed. Is like, you know, a guy that big shouldn't be able to do stuff like that, and he proves it to you every time in the ring. And Tozawa, being the newest member of the Alpha Academy, has this weird little thing where he's seen as the comedy relief, he's seen as the comedy sidekick, he's seen as, like, the loser friend in a nice way, if that makes sense. But, like, all the jokes surround him. But every match he has, he comes in as the funny, jokey guy and then proves that he can still fucking go. And so each member of the team has a different story like that going into every match, and they already exist as a team. Just makes sense. They would be a nice underdog team because, you know, Gable's the leader. Gable has that, you know, awesome, believable, supportable underdog mentality, and everybody that he takes under his wing sort of absorbs that energy. So, for an example, Alpha Academy versus the Viking Raiders and Bronson Reed in the finals of some tournament somewhere would be awesome. Like, you would have those moments with Otis versus Bronson, Otis versus Ivar, but then you'd have, you know, Gable getting in there and suplexing Ivar off the top rope or doing something absolutely ridiculous, and then Tozawa and Eric can be on the outside just trading strikes or something. I don't know. Could be a lot of fun. Now, this one I'm throwing in here just for me, just because they're people that I like, and I'm getting in under a technicality. They did team like 2 weeks ago on Raw for like a one-off against Imperium, and that's DIY and The Miz. Miz has a career that most people could only dream about. Happy for him. People seem to hold that against him. I don't really get it. And DIY, it's been a struggle for them. They were awesome in NXT. They were absolutely slaughtered as individual wrestlers on the main roster. And then Papa H took over and we're finally getting DIY. And so many people are so determined to say, well, it's too little, too late. Well, it's not. They're still fantastic wrestlers. They're still a fantastic tag team. There's still another one final beat that they could play out on the main roster eventually. But in the meantime, DIY teaming up with The Miz, having the comedic value of, oh my god, I can't believe we're teaming up with this guy. Oh my god, I can't believe we're teaming up with this guy. And it works. You got the weird, jokey Cleveland connection between The Miz and Gargano, so it's really Ciampa on the outside being, you know, grumpy old man Tommaso Ciampa, which is also awesome, because you got Miz out there, who's a character, you got Gargano, who's the smiling, snow-white, high-flying babyface, and then the third hot tag goes to Tommaso Ciampa, who just comes in and fucks people up. Awesome. Very, very, very awesome. These are the guys, these are the personalities that I would say could go off and have a feud within this division that wouldn't necessarily need to have the championship. I mean, DIY has the NXT history, and if you were on board with them there, then you're probably on board now. And Miz, like I said, has a resume a mile long. The guy doesn't, I hope he does, but the guy doesn't have to win another title as long as he lives, and he's still had a better career than most people that you guys probably cheer for. Now, switching up, going back to NXT for a little bit, you got Chase U, who have the very weird story right now of the school being bankrupt, and Andre Chase is making bets with OTM, and they owe money to the family. Honorable mention, if Two Dimes was still in NXT, obviously Tony D, Stax, and Two Dimes would be on this list, for sure. But Chase U, again, is a lot like Alpha Academy, where you've got Chase, the leader, who really wants to prove to himself that he can, you know, drag his team to victory type of thing. Duke Hudson, who is like a horse of an athlete, one of the best hot tags in WWE. And they've got Riley Osborne, who's just barely scraped into NXT, currently in NXT's men's breakout tournament. I think he just beat Lexus King as I'm recording this right now. So him being there, wanting to be part of this team, not only to, you know, boost the university, I'm saying that in tight air quotes, but also have, you know, his first bit of gold be with his teacher, with his fellow student, and all that kind of thing. Have a breakout moment. I don't think he's going to win the tournament, by the way. I think it's going to be Obafemi. So his big breakout moment is going to be helping his, like I say, his teacher and his fellow student win these brand new titles. And I think you could get a heck of a story out of that. Because right now you've got the whole thing where Chase has said that Duke Hudson is the MVP of Chase U. Well, maybe Miles Bourne is the one that gets the pin that gets them the championship. And maybe he gets the MVP award, or their dual, and they're the most valuable players, plural. You can have a lot of fun with that. Again, these are characters. I mean, NXT is ridiculously character driven. Look at what I just said with OTM and the family. Ridiculously character driven. You could have a lot of feuds for this team that don't involve the title. Now, one team on here that I want to be an entire story, like necessarily away from the title, but like kind of we're going to teach the division a lesson type thing, is the No Quarter Catch Crew. And if you don't watch NXT, you're really not going to know who the No Quarter Catch Crew are. But it's Drew Gulak, William Regal's son, Charlie Dempsey, Damon Kemp, and Miles Bourne, again, much like Riley Osborne, relatively new to NXT. But any three of these four, but they're already kind of doing it. They're already kind of like lashing out at, you know, the brawlers. They're lashing out at the high flyers. They're saying, you know, get down on the mat. You know, the catch-as-catch-can wrestling is the way to go. So, get them in there saying we as a team, we as a grappling team, we're going to show you which way to go. We're going to show you that, you know, high flying isn't going to matter when I grab you by the ankle and ground you down to the mat. Or we're going to show you that you can throw as many punches as you can, but if I grab that arm and put it in an arm bar, you're fucking done. Like, have it be a mentality. Kind of like when Kevin Nash took on, like, the entire X Division in TNA because they were tiny guys, except for Paparazzi Productions, and we don't need to go there. But I think you could have a whole separate story of the No Quarter Catch Crew, led by Drew Gulak, saying, you know what, everybody here is wrong. And that works as a heel thing, because we all know somebody in our real lives who thinks, you know, everybody else is wrong and I'm right, and my way is right, and the way I think is right. And meanwhile, everybody else around them is incredibly flourishing, incredibly successful, and they're bitter about it. And it's just you can roll that into such a cool story. On the other side of the coin, you can have a really happy story. You can have a really feel good story, because you need to have a team synonymous with your division. With the tag team division, realistically, in the past, like, recent generation, I guess you could say, the two teams that were most, what's the word I'm looking for? The most synonymous with the WWE tag team division was the Usos and the New Day. Now, the Usos are split. We're going to talk about Jimmy Uso later. The New Day are still a team. The New Day of Kingston and Woods, they could do a lot for this division. They really could, but we as an audience and as a team, they'd have to realize, oh, you know, it's heartbreaking. You know, if Big E was here, and I don't want to profit on the injury and the current situation of Big E. I want to treat this respectfully. I want to treat this the way it should be treated. But Kofi's a high flyer. Woods is a high flyer. You got one other guy on the Raw roster right now who ain't doing very much, who could make a high-flying team a little bit more spectacular. And for my money, that's Ricochet. Ricochet joins the New Day. You tell the story of him getting picked on by all the other teams, saying, oh, you think you can fill Big E's shoes and da-da-da-da, or, oh, you're taking up this guy's spot because he's injured, rah-da-rah-da-rah. You have Ricochet struggle with that. You have the New Day trying to bring him in and make him feel part of the team and whatnot. You tell a really cool story there, and New Day and Ricochet as a trio potentially carrying those titles for the first little while. Awesome story. As I say, you cannot doubt the resume and the tag team resume of guys like Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, and Ricochet joining that team, whereas you had two high flyers and a powerhouse when Big E was there. I really hope if they did this, they would be able to bring in Big E in some way, shape, or form. Have him be in the background, you know, maybe giving Ricochet his blessing, or maybe he gets to be on commentary when his boys are wrestling. Something like that. First and foremost, we want Big E to be okay. We want Big E to come back to wrestling if and when he wants to, and if and when he's able to. But because we're carefully telling this story of Ricochet sort of taking that spot, I would want Big E to be involved, because it would kind of quietly give the audience permission to enjoy it, if that makes sense. But New Day and Ricochet would be three high flyers, whereas anybody used to facing the New Day had to prep for two high flyers and a powerhouse. So it would almost be the new Day, if that makes any sense. And yes, that sounds really cliche, and yes, I smiled when I said it. That's absolutely fine. Don't worry about it. Gallus is already a trio. They already exist. People think what they think of Gallus. I really like Gallus. The Coffee Brothers, along with Wolfgang, are just another, like, blunt object, let me hit you with a hammer type team. But it always has been Mark Coffey and Wolfgang going for tag team gold, and Joe Coffey going for singles titles. And neither have really happened, if we're honest. I mean, I think they were tag team champions in NXT UK, but who remembers NXT UK? I want this to be a moment where the trios titles are announced, or the six-man titles are announced, whatever you want to call them. And Gallus basically says, well, we're a six-man team. We should take those. And just have it be that matter of fact. You know, have them do one of the little skits that they do on NXT where they're all sitting around the bar talking about those belts, and it's like, any reason we shouldn't go for those? Nope. Okay, let's go. Cheers. And off to the races. The Brawling Brutes I have on here with an exception, because they have just sort of split. There's been a split way between Ridge Holland and Pete Dunne / Butch. And Sheamus, I believe, is off injured right now. So what I would do, because right now Ridge Holland is in NXT doing a very, I will say, a very bad idea. They're playing up the idea that Ridge Holland injures people, and they've just done an angle where they injured Ilya Dragunov. So he's, I guess, going back to NXT for a reset for a little bit, but he did split off from Butch before that happened. So we did get the idea that Butch is kind of going out on his own. But the other thing that's happening is this coming New Year's Revolution. If you haven't seen my preview already, it should be up by the time this goes up. The New Year's Revolution episode of SmackDown. It's pretty deadly. And a partner of, Pretty Deadly versus Butch and a partner of his choosing. And the rumor is that that partner is going to be Tyler Bate. And that's going to be Tyler Bate's call-up from NXT, which is awesome because it's two-thirds of British Strong Style. Now, again, if Trent Seven was still in WWE, Trent Seven just signed for TNA/Impact at the show that I was at in December. So he's set up for TNA. Awesome for him. Really cool. Also, he's still the Destiny World Champion. Check it off your Spass Phoenix bucket list. It's fine. If we could have British Strong Style as a trio on this list, goddamn, I would put them on this list. But that being said, we can't have Trent Seven. We can't have Ridge Holland because they've both gone off to TNA and NXT, respectfully. So Tyler Bate and Butch, hopefully taking his real name of Pete Dunne back, and then returning from injury, you have Sheamus. So you have the best bits of the Brawling Brutes, and I guess you could say the best bits of British Strong Style as well, forming a new version of the Brawl. And it is, let it be that European styling, let their first rivalry be against Gallus, where they all just fucking beat each other bloody. You've got the aerial technicalness of Tyler Bate. You've got, you know what I love from Pete Dunne when he does finger stuff and joint manipulation, and that combined with just a general smash mouth nature of a guy like Sheamus and opponents like Gallus, let's be real for a second, could be a lot of fun. This could be, whereas like the No Quarter Catch Crew and Alpha Academy and DIY could be all these like technical masterclasses. This is the part of the division where people just punch each other in the face, and that can be absolutely fine. Imperium. They already exist. We know what they are. I don't really care much for Vinci and Kaiser as a tag team on their own. Love Walter or Gunther. Love the three of them as a trio. When they wrestle as a trio, they wrestled against Miz and DIY recently. I love the three of them as a trio. I do not give a shit about Vinci and Kaiser as a tag team, which is unfortunate, because I did for a little bit. They were good on NXT, and then they got boring, and then they were good on the main roster, and then they got boring. But they are ridiculously talented, which is the sad bit of that. I think they are genuinely, as performers, I think they are more motivated when they're in there with Gunther, because Gunther operates at such a level and is operating at such a star power level at the moment that he elevates them, which is awesome. But right now, Imperium has this whole story of, like, he's always disappointed in what they do and whatever, they can't get anything done. You can't win as a tag team. I guess I have to bring you with me, and I guess we'll win as a trio. They can be successful, and he can still hold that over their heads, which I think is a really cool dynamic to play with. It is a little bit Bloodline-esque, but, you know, why not? Just do it. Much like the Viking Raiders Bronson Reed team, I don't necessarily think I would throw the belts on them. They would be another cool final boss, tournament final, these are the last guys you have to beat before you become champion type of team. The next one is one that I'm really excited about, and not a lot of other people are, and that's fine. I like what I like, and plus Scarlett is hot, so there's that. Karrion Kross has been doing these vignettes for the past couple of weeks, basically telling the wrestling world to get ready for what's coming. And in the last video, it was one flash of a silhouette, and very, very unmistakably, it was the silhouette of Paul Ellering and the AOP. AOP have apparently been back under contract with WWE for like a year now, and they just haven't made it to television, which is ridiculous. Karrion Kross, you know, coming back with, you know, he's not coming with the four horsemen, he's coming with these two big massive motherfuckers behind him. I want him to do all the ridiculous stuff. I want him to make as many, because they're the authors of pain, I want him to make as many book puns as possible. I want him to bring the hourglass back. I want Scarlett coming out and doing Scarlett things with the hourglass. This is the one more than any other that I want to be both hey, let's have them have the Trios titles, but also, hey, let's have Karrion Kross with these two massive fuckers behind him, like, get a rocket strapped to his ass, and, like, I'm not gonna say go after Roman Reigns, but maybe go after Roman Reigns. People are gonna hate me for that. People hate Karrion Kross for some reason. Now, I get it. I very much get it. Karrion Kross is not everybody's cup of tea. If you don't like, say, the Judgment Day, or you don't like Shotzi Blackheart, or you don't like Nikki Cross, this new crazy iteration of Nikki Cross, you're probably not going to like Karrion Kross. Now, I go back to when he was first introduced in NXT, and yes, it was in the crowdless era, which really sucked. The very first time I saw his entrance, I'm like, yo, this guy's got something. He ain't doing 25 stars in the Tokyo Dome, brother. He doesn't have to do 25 stars in the Tokyo Dome, brother. He's a presence. He's a presentation. He just... The more people don't like him and the more he doesn't get pushed by the company properly, the more crazy he gets, which is a very interesting thing. Even in the vignettes, he looks a bit, like, disheveled, shall we say. Pairing him up with the Authors of Pain is great. I mean, pairing Seth Rollins up with the Authors of Pain back in the day worked to a certain degree, as long as it was a thing. So I'm pretty sure that even if there's no Trios Championship, these guys are going to be a pretty big fixture on SmackDown going forward, because the Bloodline thing is kind of falling apart, let's be real for a second, and Judgment Day is on Raw. We're going to talk about both of those teams later on down the line. What I will say is, also on that SmackDown, we finally got the reveal. Santos Escobar has left the LWO and his new backup, because he's still in the Intercontinental Championship tournament. It's going to be him or Kevin Owens going up against Logan Paul at the Royal Rumble. So it's going to be Kevin Owens. That's fine. Kevin Owens is going to beat three people with a broken arm, which isn't the best booking in the world, but Kevin Owens is awesome, so he can get away with it. It's fine. The problem being, Santos Escobar's real story is breaking away from Rey Mysterio in the LWO. And he's gotten Angel and Humberto by his side because Cruz del Toro and Joaquin Wilde stayed in the LWO, stayed with Rey Mysterio, stayed with Zelina Vega, stayed with Carlito, etc. So what you have here is, on one side of the coin, you've got one newly established team in Santos, Angel, and Humberto, and he's referring to them as the new Legado del Fantasma. So that's going to dig at Del Toro and Wild right away. They're going to work as a trio. They're going to be his backup for the most part, but it is going to be them as a trio. And what it does is it opens up the next group I have down on my list, and that's the LWO. Now, the fun thing about the LWO is you can have any combination of the LWO. You can have Rey with Del Toro and Wild. You can have Dragon Lee with Del Toro and Wild. You can have Carlito with Del Toro and Wild. You can have Rey, Dragon Lee, and Carlito as a team while Del Toro and Wild go do something else. And there always is the outside chance of Bad Bunny, who's also in the LWO, technically, and also wrestles, technically. So this is probably the best prime example of, hey, we've got a division here, but also we can have rivalries within the division that have nothing to do with the championship. The fact that Santos Escobar is calling his new group the real LWO, because they're the Legado World Order, you can do something as surface and cheesy as who's the real LWO. Obviously, it's the LWO that's headed up by Rey Mysterio. We get that. But there's options, because Rey Mysterio in real life is sort of taken out right now. So who's going to represent Rey Mysterio? Probably Dragon Lee, the guy that he anointed as the absolute future of Lucha Libre and is currently the NXT North American champion. So that doesn't hurt either, because this is two teams on the main roster going at each other, getting main roster eyes, main roster attention, and one of them is carrying an NXT championship. So once again, you get NXT representation in this trios thing. Never mind having Gallus in there. Never mind the potential call-up of Tyler Bate. Never mind No Quarter Catch Crew, Chase University, Scripps, and OTM. Very, 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 very long list of opportunities for integration of NXT in what I've got here so far. Now, we get to the headliners, because You got the OC, you got the Bloodline, you got Judgment Day. Three great teams, three collections of insanely talented people, and all three of them are in a shambles or heading to a shambles eventually, which is kind of awesome. The OC, I don't want to exaggerate this story because it's only been going on like a week. AJ Styles is back from whatever. I think he was injured. I don't even remember why he was gone, to be perfectly honest with you. He was taken out by the Bloodline a while ago, specifically by Solo Sikoa doing that weird jump off of the technical equipment in the back, and we didn't really see it, and it's supposed to be the theater of the mind and all that kind of thing. But he came back. The OC were all glad to see him come back. He's like, oh, we're so happy to see you. We're so happy to see you. And he just looked at them and walked away and said, well, are you happy to see me? And he walked away from all of them. So he's going on a bit of a heel turn. He's now fighting for the opportunity. And again, I will say, please go check out the preview that I did for Day 1, New Year's Evil and New Year's Revolution, because it should already be up on the channel right now. He's got his eyes set on the World Championship. He's got his eyes set at a shot at Roman Reigns, which I don't think is going to happen. Spoiler alert. It's going to be Randy Orton. Spoiler alert again. But if he's going to go get more bitter, get more angry. I mean, the dude took the time off and came back jacked, just like Randy Orton. But if he's going to take this bitterness and turn it into a heel turn, I think there's a really cool opportunity for Gallows and Anderson specifically to find him in the back and be like, look, we just talked to Nick Aldis. You know, we got the spoiler that WWE are creating these new belts. You don't have to go down this dark path. You don't have to go all on your own and whatever. Like, this is a brand new thing that we can achieve. We can achieve it together. We can be the OC again. And then potentially, either they go in and win it, which would be awesome, because then we'd see more Gallows and Anderson on our screen, we'd see more AJ Styles on our screen, and we'd see all three of those guys that deserve gold opportunities having a gold opportunity. And the other side of the coin is, if they go into that tournament, or however we establish the first champions, and lose, that could be the breaking point of AJ Styles. He turns on his friends, he has a match with Gallows, he has a match with Anderson, and he just fucks with everybody. And then you could have Mia Yim in the Zelina Vega role when she was trying to keep keep the LWO together, and it fell apart anyway. She could do the same. Maybe you get a Mia Yim heel turn, and you've got heel AJ Styles with Mia Yim in his corner. That could be a lot of fun. Now, the Bloodline is an entirely different story, because Sammy left, Jay left. Sammy's had success, Jay's had success. Roman still has his championship, but Jimmy's kind of a goofball right now, and Roman is trying to prep Solo Sikoa to be the next tribal chief. So, Roman, kind of like I just said about Gunther with Imperium, could say, hey, I know what I'm doing, point at Solo and be like, this guy knows the path that he's on. What are you bringing to the table? I mean, head of the table, blah, 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 do the puns. What are you bringing to the table? Can you bring this gold to the family? And absolutely, the story dictates that not only do they lose, but the fact that Jimmy Uso eats the pin. That's how that has to go. And then he gets excommunicated, and maybe he gets a new lease on life as a babyface on SmackDown, the way his brother's doing on Raw. I'm not saying immediately team him back up with Jay, immediately throw him back over onto Raw, because Jay is a singles guy, even though he's been in a tag team with Cody Rhodes. Jay as a singles guy on Raw is fantastic. This could be the nail in Jimmy Uso's coffin as far as the Bloodline goes, but he could then go on, whereas Jay is somewhere else succeeding, Jimmy could stay right in Roman Reigns' backyard and succeed as a babyface and do wicked character stuff for both of them, or it could just start a feud between Jimmy and Solo, which could also be a lot of fun and also do a lot of good for both guys. But it all starts because Roman Reigns gives him one last chance, and that one last chance is these six-man titles. Now, come to my boys, the Judgment Day. I love the Judgment Day. I do not want the Judgment Day to split up. I do want the Judgment Day to go for these six-man titles, though, and there's two different ways you can go with that. Way number one, Priest and Balor lose the tag team titles. Priest has got one eyeball on the door, one eyeball on, I'm just going to go off on my own, one eyeball on, are these guys an anchor around my foot, etc. He's also still not 100% on JD McDonagh. So you got Finn Balor, who's the smart one, who says, we can't lose Priest. Priest is the powerhouse of this team, whatever, whatever. Hey, Damo, come on, stay in the group, whatever. Here's the deal. I know you're still not cool with JD McDonagh. I know you don't see what he brings to the group just yet. I'm the one that brought him in. I need to prove him to you. Let's go for those trios titles. Awesome story. If they win them, it holds the group together a little bit longer. And again, like the Bloodline, like the OC, if they lose, that could be Damian Priest's, you know, cue to exit, so to speak. I don't want him to leave. I don't want the Judgment Day to split. Let me be abundantly clear about that. But if they're going to split them, it's one of those, again, it's one of those last nail in the coffin type situations. Or you could do things the other way, where Damian Priest has already left. He's cashed in. He's potentially become a champion off the back of Seth Rollins or Cody Rhodes or CM Punk or whoever. Damian Priest versus CM Punk would be just a really good match in general. As I'm recording this, I'm going to see Cody Rhodes versus Damian Priest in a steel cage at the Coca-Cola Coliseum tonight at the house show in Toronto. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So my mind might wander a little bit on that. The other side of the coin is he cashes in, he becomes a champion, he becomes a babyface, he accepts the adulation of the fans, and Finn Balor is left holding the bag a little bit. Rhea Ripley comes to Finn Balor and says, hey, look, we just lost Damo. That's a big loss for us. You got to bring something to this group. And he looks at, you know, his protege in JD McDonagh and his more recent protege in Dominic Mysterio and says, you know what? Guys, come with me. We're going to get those new titles. And wouldn't it be brilliant if some combination of the LWO that included Rey Mysterio were the champions when he went off and got off them? Because then you could have a moment where Dominic Mysterio pins his dad for a belt. And that would be fun too. So either these belts keep Damian Priest in the Judgment Day, or these belts are what pushes Damian Priest out of the Judgment Day. You put a sorely lacking spotlight on what JD McDonagh can do, because I think they're still not using JD McDonagh to his full extent, and Dominic Mysterio is awesome, and Finn Balor, by God, when was the last time Finn Balor got to wear a belt? I am once again asking you to put a belt on Finn Balor. I don't know, I don't know what I'm doing yet. Now, the last one is just a fun one, and the last one isn't even 100% team of, like, what I would say my guys. But if you're not going to have proper teams, what do? When the Wyatt family was a thing, what did you do? You found three individuals to try and take them down. When the Shield was a thing, what did we do? We took three or four random people and said, hey, can we take them down? Can we be a super team that takes out the bad guys? When the Bloodline rose up, we got super teams to sort of take them out. When the Judgment Day was rising, we had super teams to take them out. So, if you're not going to have a team that's a team because they're a team, if you're not going to have a faction that's a faction because they're a faction, if you're just going to bring three guys together and say, okay, whoever has those titles at the time, it could be any of the heel teams. It could be the No Quarter Catch crew. It could be Gallus. It could be Imperium. It could be Cross and the Authors of Pain. It could be the Bloodline or the Judgment Day. Again, the super team, I would say, to go back to an old wrestling reference of the two-man power trip with Austin and Triple H, I would say the babyface three-man power trip, Cody Rhodes, Sami Zayn, Jey Uso. Here's your super team that holds the belts until an actual team that's a team tries to knock them off their perch. And that's a lot. That's a lot of fun, too. Cody Rhodes, like I said, never 100% my guy, but the guy elevates everything that he elevated Stardust. Sami Zayn, you saw the reaction he got in Montreal this year. The crowd wants this guy to have anything. And Jey Uso, I'm going to say it one more time, Jey Uso deserves to be the one to beat Roman Reigns. It's not going to be him, but he deserves it. He so synonymous with tag team wrestling as well with his brother, would add that gravitas to this. Sami Zayn has 100% of the crowd behind him. There's that gravitas. Cody Rhodes is basically the new John Cena. He adds that gravitas. If you put a trios or a six-man championship around these three waists, you have the crowd by the balls, and I think that's awesome. I think, like I say, look up and down this list. There's levels to this game, definitely, but these guys are at the top. These guys are at the top until you build up another team and they become the measuring stick. And they become a team almost by force of will. That's it. That's all. Scripps and OTM, Jinder and Indus Sheer, Lashley and the Prophets, the Viking Raiders and Bronson Reed, Alpha Academy, Miz and DIY, Chase U, the No Quarter Catch Crew, the New Day with Ricochet, Gallus, the New Brawling Brutes, Imperium, Cross and Authors of Pain, Santos, Angel, and Umberto, any combination of the LWO, the OC, the Bloodline, the Judgment Day, and the babyface, what did I say? The babyface three-man power trip of Cody Rhodes, Sami Zayn, and Jey Uso. If you're going to tell me that that's not enough to start a WWE six-man division, you're just wrong. And what better way for me to end off the year by saying, hey, I'm right. Everybody else is wrong. Thank you to everybody that does follow this channel, though. In the past couple of days, I've come over a small little goal that I had set for myself for this year. We surpassed it. Not really going to get into what it is. I had a place where I needed to be, and in the last couple of days, we've actually reached that just before 2024. All of you guys are awesome. I hope you guys are having a good holiday. I hope you guys have a great new year. I will see you guys in 2024. There's a lot of stuff coming up. I've been Spaz, your YWC reality check. Subscribe up there, talk down there, start a conversation. Keep all these conversations going. Don't be a stranger. I will talk to each and every last one of you later. But for right now, I am tagging out. Bye, guys.